Say that again. What am I supposed to say?
You say, well, welcome to the Toncast.
Welcome to the Todd.
Ton.
Ton.
Cast. I'm your host, Joel Stopher. And I'm here with very special guest, Todd Robert Anderson.
I am here with very special guest, Todd.
I'm going to leave it like that. That's great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Anytime.
I'm a big fan of your work.
You are a tough guest to get a hold of.
I am very hard to book. Mm-hmm. Very hard to book. Mm-hmm. Because I have no time. I'm incredibly busy. Very, very successful.
That's the reason that I drove 30 minutes to get to your house to do this.
Yeah, because I had a lot of stuff to do around the house.
Yeah.
You were in, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with your acting work.
I have a decent little resume.
You were in Indiana Jones movie.
Mm-hmm.
The best one.
Some people think so.
I don't know.
I haven't really done the research on that, what the numbers are. But yeah, it's the most recent one, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
It's the one people like the most.
Yeah.
I mean, without
a
doubt.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, you were also in Species 3.
I was.
Also...
Direct-to-video.
A direct-to-video sequel, but yes. More popular than the original. Right? I mean, Species 3 is the biggest Species film. Crystal Skull is the most popular.
I actually had no idea about that, but I will go along with that.
And you wore a lot of makeup in the Species 3. You had to...
I did. I had to wear a fat suit.
Yeah. Because, how long did that take to get into?
It was a couple hours, at least, yeah. They had, we had to do, the weirdest part was I had to do a head cast. Because they had to put a whole fake,
So you had to get in one of those boxes and they put, you had to breathe through straws or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I had to, they just wrapped my whole head and shoulders in, plaster cast.
Uh-huh.
And then put little straws in. And I've never been claustrophobic in my life. And all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And they're doing it. I'm fine. No problem. And I panicked. I literally panicked, and I just said, when they covered my nose and my mouth, even though I could breathe, it was still pressure.
Yeah,
and it was the freakiest thing I've experienced, in that realm. And they had to rip it off. They had to literally they did this whole thing, and then they ripped it off of me.
Uh-huh.
And I breathed, and they were like, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" And I was like, "I think I'm okay. I'm fine." And they said, "Are you? We can do this another day, or we can figure out something else." And I said, "No, let's do this right now." And I just calmed myself down, and I went into the second attempt, and I got through it.
So, in calming yourself down, did you do meditation?
Just, not really. Just breathing. Just trying to get my head around what it was that was freaking me out.
If I did that,
it was okay.
I think at this point, if I did that, I think I would need to take some Xanax or Ativan or something.
That was probably the next step for me had I not been able to.
Right. Because I did mask work in college, where we did some of that stuff, but it wasn't that intense.
Right.
But I remember not being particularly fond of breathing through straws.
But yeah.
I didn't like it.
For some reason, had I been in college, I think I would have been much more... the younger that I would have been, I would have been more able to handle it. I think it's as I got older, somehow, fears take over. You become more conservative. And
you become... maybe it's just as simple as you're aware of your own mortality once you cross a certain age line.
Exactly,
once you... You're in your 30s, you suddenly... I think that's when I really started going, oh... and I would have panic attacks in the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah.
And just wake up holy crap, I could die at any second.
Totally.
And then once I started having those, I developed... it's like I get seasick now. Like, none of that stuff bothered me when I was younger.
I've always prided myself on being, like, the calm, level-headed guy in any situation. Never had a panic attack, never had any... You know, I could always, like, kind of work through whatever stressful situation. After that Species 3 experience... I started to have more, like, anxiety about things, and this was so... I did that, like, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whenever it was. And, like, I had my first panic attack about 2 years ago. Like just for no reason. Like, I'm just driving my car.
You were in your car?
I was in my car. Driving on the freeway, coming home from work, everything's fine, and something weird started happening, and I felt like... I thought I was going to die. I mean, that's what a real anxiety...
Yeah, that's
attack.
What it feels like.
It feels like,
like,
you think, okay, this is it. This is my... I'm the end. I'm at the end of my life. This is how it happens. I crash and burn horribly on the freeway. And I just got myself pulled over, like, because you just start breathing heavily, and you don't know what's going on in your chest, and it feels like your heart's going to come out of your nose or something. And I just pulled myself over and just kind of calmed, like, somehow got out of it and drove surface streets the rest of the way home. It was really intense. And I, you know, have had a couple since then.
But. For me, it happens if I get panic attacks, it's in the middle of being asleep.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't happen to me. Yeah. I mean, I get nervous sometimes.
I have had that too.
In, like, auditions. I'll freak out a little bit and have to keep it together.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But I haven't, like, lost control in a wakeful state. It's more at night. I think because, you know, I have a little bit of sleep apnea. Okay. So sometimes that'll wake me up.
Right.
And that choking sensation, like, when you're asleep, just bolt upright. Yeah. I'm dying!
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, man.
No, you're not dying. No. You're just snoring a little bit, you dummy.
Yeah. It's a strange thing. That your body does to you. I'm not really sure what we're supposed to learn from it.
I don't know that we're supposed to learn. I don't understand anything anymore and what I'm supposed to learn. Like, outside of learning, you know, as a dumb white man, learning, like, just how deep-seated my country's racism really was, as opposed to something I thought we were actually evolving out of. The fact that we're in this place now where it's just clear to me.
Yeah.
Like, if I've learned anything, it's that the undercurrent of bigotry in this country is horrifying.
Horrifying.
It's horrifying.
That is what the last, you know, few years really, I mean, it's the Obama administration too, where it really started to come.
Yeah, out. Yeah,
but
for
now
sure.
It's come to a head, obviously, with this last election. And yeah, if anything, it's shown us how deep that is and like, whoa. I mean, you knew it was always there.
Well, and people have been, black people specifically, black women even, have, you know, basically been shouting at us for years that it's real.
Yeah.
And being dumb white people are like, you know, no, those people are dying out. And I guess that's, like, for me in my mind for a long time, it's just a matter of time before all the old bigots are in their grave. But there's so many young people who are wildly, violently bigoted.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's flabbergasting. It's flabbergasting. But I'm also, I mean, I guess, and it's turned me into kind of a jerk when it comes to people with opposing viewpoints, because I just don't, you know, I don't have the patience anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's so hard with so much of it coming out now to stay vigilant and stay on top of it and have a real sense that, you know, my awareness of it now that I have, because I'm a privileged white guy, but I'm seeing it really more than I ever have, and how to, like, maintain a sense that we can actually get past it someday and do something to help people, like, understand why it's a flawed way of living a life. sure. to have this kind of bigotry, and how can we find a way to cure the country of this, you know, illness of bigotry?
Yeah, but how, like, but how do
it's
you?
It's really hard, yeah. yeah. It's really hard to maintain that sense and not just be overwhelmed of, like, oh my God, it's just so, like, vampant and everywhere, and, like, I don't know what we can possibly do. We're at such odds with, and now we have an administration that is, like, proponent of it, even though, you know, Trump might come out and say anti-Semitism is bad every once in a while. He's got people in there that are Nazis, that are
like
blatant racist white supremacist Nazis.
Well, yeah, and Bannon just said at that, what's it called, the whatever conference that they had where they were all some jackass handed out Trump flags to everybody that were like were in the Russian colors.
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
like Russian flags with see, Trump, and they had no idea. They were just waving, yay, idiots. And then at that conference, Bannon said the whole reason we appointed all these people was to deconstruct all these government agencies.
Yeah,
like it's not like we're That's all we're said. Looking at like this is insane. Why are they putting these people in at the heads of these and it's to destroy them.
That's the purpose.
They're incompetent people who have no desire to do anything but destroy.
Right.
And they're the perfect people to do it.
Pretty terrifying.
It is. It is really terrifying.
And adding fuel to the fire and then, you know, creating even more confusion of, like, truth versus fake news, and the people that are supportive of Trump are going to launch even further into the media is out to get them, and the media is the liar, and, you know, they're the establishment, and the left is the establishment, and they're the liars, and, you know, so that there is such a confusion between, you know, what's real and what's not.
Yeah.
And like, it's just terrifying.
Because, yeah.
Like, how do we ever get past that? How do we ever really find a way to identify what the truth is so that everybody agrees? Because we're never all going to agree now
yeah, that's
on what the truth is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And, you know, when I have conversations with more thoughtful Republicans, they're always talking to me about, well, you know, you classify anyone who supports the Republican Party as a racist. And I say, yes, at this point I do. How can I not? I mean, look what your party has done, what they've put in the White House, and you're telling me to give you the benefit of the doubt on this?
No.
If you go and you fucking get rid of all these assholes and prove to me, you guys are in power. That's the other thing that drives me nuts about this,
right.
is the Republicans control everything now, mm-hmm. and they're still, their constituents are still, you know, in between stop your liberal tears and get over it and give them a chance, in between those things, they're like, you can't call us racists. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's not a fair blanket statement. Whoa. You wanted a politically incorrect society. Here.
Yeah.
We've been polite for the last 8 years not calling you racists.
Right.
But now it's
cats out of the bag.
Yeah, you guys,
a racist regime, and you know, and there's varying degrees of that racism. You know, there's casual racism, and there's blatant.
Well, I think a lot of it is
violent racism.
Yeah,
but it's across the spectrum racism.
Right,
and they're a part of it. They are advocating it, whether they think they are or not.
Right,
that's what's so stupid about it.
It's stupid and it's frustrating and it's impossible to have those conversations with those people because they can't. Even if you go I've tried with multiple people, given them all the here are the facts, and I've looked things up for them. I've given them articles to read.
Right.
They don't read them.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's always TLDR with them. That's what I didn't even know what that was until this whole election. Too long, didn't read.
Right.
Like more Republicans and Trump supporters specifically on that side would say if I posted something saying here's why you're wrong on this. TLDR,
there's no patience.
TLDR,
right.
It's fake news. No, it's not. It's not. No, you can't say that all the news is fake
because it does. Yeah.
Is it fucked up? Is the 24-hour news cycle fucked up and wrong? Yeah, because it's about ratings, and it leans towards that.
Totally.
That's why Trump is president, for Christ's sake.
Totally.
But that doesn't mean it's fake news.
Right.
You know, I'm always flabbergasted still to this day why, you know, CNN will, like, stick to one thing, one big story, when there's all these other much more terrifying and interesting and important stories that they sort of just throw on the ticker underneath.
Right.
It's like, why are you focusing on tiny hands?
And it is, and it's totally ratings driven. And the whole concept of, you know, the left news and the right news, you know, the biases, and obviously there are some stations that lean more left in their reporting, and obviously some that lean way more right, but it really is about ratings. That's what it comes down to.
Sure.
It's not about, I mean, sometimes lies come out in the news, sometimes they do, that we know that from, you know, watching Fox News. We know that sometimes from watching, you know, and MSNBC, they're all doing it, but they're not. It's not necessarily ideologically driven. It's ratings driven. It's about what's going to generate the eyes on their channel,
right? Absolutely.
And so, to me, the problem is there's too much money in everything. Now we're getting into a whole other topic, because really that's what has to change. If you have, you know, our free press that's run by
corporations, there's a conflict of interest.
There's a huge conflict of interest. Right. If you have politicians that are supposed to be our representatives, you know, that tell the truth and ride a moral line and an ethical line, that are being paid by lobbyists and big corporations to, you know, do their dirty work, I mean, that's a major conflict of interest.
Yeah.
How do you ever have any kind of government that or free press that, you know, that does anything useful for the people?
Yeah. You can't. And it requires so much time and effort if you're a critical thinker.
Yeah.
To like we were talking before we started recording about this S measure here in LA on March 7th and like the misinformation that I had been given, and you had more information, but like it's hard to find that information.
Oh, yeah.
Just on that weird thing, you could spend days trying to figure out what the right thing to do is.
It's so frustrating. We're supposed to be just, you know, able to live our lives and have our jobs and trust that what we're being told by our elected officials is the truth. And then we can make a decision and trust that everything's going to be fine and we know what's going to be best for us. And we can't.
No.
We have to spend days researching now.
And
take time away from, you know, I mean, that's, but that's, I mean, you know, on the positive note, that's really what's like, I think coming out of this whole experience is people are taking a little more, you know, some people, not all people.
Some people are taking more time.
A little more responsibility.
Maybe not the people that we really need to take more time.
I guess
the other, it's a weird positive thing that, you know, people put a spin on this current presidency, but it is, you know, us white people waking up and going, yeah, this has been fucked for too long and we've been turning a blind eye to it. So I guess that's good.
I think that's a good thing. If we can actually turn the tide and get, you know, some kind of handle on it, we'll see.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. So when you were in the greatest Indiana Jones movie.
The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
You played an FBI guy?
I did. I played an FBI agent.
And you were grilling the Indiana Jones character.
Yeah, I got to have a really fun scene with Mr. Harrison Ford.
How were your nerves?
I was probably more nervous than I was allowing myself to believe.
I mean, because between Harrison Ford here on this side of the camera with you, and then
Spielberg's on the other side, and Janusz Kaminski is like, you know, angling lights at me in just the right way, and you know, like these guys that I've admired for decades.
And
you know, I grew up actually, a friend of mine from the time I was young, his father and his mother and a friend of theirs knew Harrison Ford really well in like the late 60s and early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so they always told me stories about him and how much they all did drugs together. And you know, and they of course told me that because it was the '70s. You know, they were telling me that when I was like 12. And I, you know, so I had always heard these stories, and then like I decided to become an actor, and you know, so it was just really fun to like get this opportunity to actually work with this guy who I'd heard stories about when I was a kid, and then he was this big, huge, famous actor.
Right.
And I actually told him this while we were working together.
Uh-huh.
I said, I got to, you know, we were in like the middle of getting ready to do the scene or something, and I said, remind me, I got to tell you a story. We have some mutual friends. And then we did a take on something. I was, sorry, 10 years ago. Jesus. And so we ended, and he goes, what is it?
Yeah.
And so I told him the whole thing, and I was like, and he was like, oh yeah, Rob and Peter. Geez, I haven't talked to those guys in decades. And how the hell are they? And he says, I was so stoned back then. Just like that was his memory of that.
You're
time.
Right. As opposed to now.
As opposed to now, I'm thinking he's pretty stoned the whole time, too.
Driving planes into other planes and whatnot. Jesus Christ, man.
Crashing airplanes.
Maybe you should get a new hobby.
I think so. I think he's a little long in the tooth for that hobby. But he was great. He was a really, really good guy to work with. He did this one thing before we started shooting. We were sitting, you know, in our places on the set, and they're setting up around us, and he just does this long... He didn't tell me he was going to do this, but he just gave me this long, silent, intense stare. Like, he just...
Before you started rolling?
Before we started rolling. They're setting up around us, and we're just kind of hanging, you know, kind of looking at the sides, and people are doing stuff around us, and he's just, like, doing this to me.
Oh my God!
Like, and I'm talking for like, I mean, you know.
What about the other guy? There were two FBI guys.
Yeah.
Did he stare at the other FBI guy?
Didn't do it to him. Didn't do it to him.
Just
to me. And I was kind of like, okay. This is, must be some acting method technique that he's using on me right now. And I tried to just kind of stay with him on it because I didn't even notice it at first. I just was kind of looking around, and then all of a sudden I catch his eye, and then I look back and. He's just like, you know, for the listening audience at home, I mean, I wish you could see this because he was just with these really,
right.
You know, Harrison Ford, intense face, intense eyes, just beaming at me like this from about this distance,
right.
Like 5-6 feet away. Mm. And I was just kind of like, and I'm telling you, this went on for like a full minute, like
just,
at least a full minute, maybe more. Uh-huh. And just like, and I kind of. My eyes were darting a little bit. I was looking away. I was a little bit like, I'm not sure what he's doing here. I guess I'm just going to try to match it. And I just kind of gave it back to him, you know,
yeah,
as much as I could.
Sure.
It was interesting. It was just an interesting thing.
Yeah.
We never spoke about it. It was just his preparation that he needed to do to have that exchange, that dialogue we were going to have.
Sure.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
That's all.
That happened to me kinda with Madonna.
Really?
She was staring at me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was...
For a different reason, maybe.
Well, yeah. It was sexual in nature because mm-hmm. she was... I had a bit part.
Yeah.
On Will and Grace. And her and Megan Mullally basically were fighting. You know, they were roommates or something and they were fighting. And they wound up fighting over me in a dance club. That was my whole scene.
Interesting.
And I spent the whole week there, you know, for these two or three lines.
Wow.
And the main reason I wanted to do the show is because it was James Burrows.
Yeah.
It was directing it. Like, talk about,
right.
Like, he's my TV version of Spielberg, you know?
Up there.
Yeah, yeah. So, and he was amazing. Like, the way he, like, you rehearsed the scene once, and he would go, do this. And do this. And then you do that, and you'd be like, holy shit. There's all the comedy that was right there.
Wow.
You know, that you weren't finding, or I wasn't finding right away. It was amazing.
He knows his shit.
Yeah, I mean, it like, he can do it in his sleep, but it is amazing.
Yeah,
it is.
Cool.
It is amazing.
That's really cool.
But Madonna, I spent the whole week...
dressing you with her eyes?
Yeah, but it was so weird because... she came into the table read, you know, at the beginning of the week. I'm sitting at the table with the whole cast of Will and Grace and James goddamn Burroughs.
Yeah.
She comes into the room late. She's late. She's Madonna. She's late. She comes in. She doesn't know who anybody is. Doesn't know who.
Why was she even doing this?
And I don't know. I don't know. She wanted to get into comedy.
$500 million or something. I mean, how?
I don't know why. I don't know why she wants to be an actress, but she does. but she comes in and bypasses the whole cast and James Burroughs and comes up to me and was like, "Hey," and I was like, "Hey."
That's great.
I'm Todd.
That's awesome.
But then after that first day, I think she realized, oh, he's just a bit player. So she didn't talk to me again for the rest of the week. Didn't look at me, you know, except power, when she had to during rehearsals. But then, so I was just like, okay. At that point, I was like, I'm just cashing this check.
Right,
you know, anything that I was going to learn, I've learned. Now it's a waiting game to get through tape night, I can get out of here.
Put it on IMDb. Move on.
Yeah, move on. So she hadn't talked to me, spoken to me, and it was right before the taping. You know, we were going over lines in the dressing room with the cast.
Right.
You know, and I think it was, it must have been Burroughs giving some kind of, you know, pep talk, as people do before those multicam sitcoms. and then that's when I noticed, why is she staring at me?
Damn.
And then she called me my character name, which I wasn't even thinking about.
Who? No,
I was. I'm just Todd.
Yeah.
So she was doing some kind of weird Madonna method thing that totally threw me. And then I was like, "Oh shit! Right? Yeah, we're actors." And she's flirting with me because that's what she's getting paid to do this week. And I was like, okay, it was really discombobulating.
Well, I mean, that's like a big lesson that I learned in that situation was, you know, how it is so hard to get past celebrity, to, like, you know, it can be, I mean, not always, sometimes you don't even give a shit, but like certain times, I mean, like I found myself, like, you know, I hadn't worked at this level before, Spielberg and Ford in the most famous movie series ever,
right?
And I was just kind of pinching myself. Like, I've done some work. I had a pretty good resume, but, like, wow, this is really amazing. And you really have to, like, get past that. You have to just
remember that
you're there to do this job, and you're an artist, and these are artists, and you guys are on the same, you know, playing field right now.
Yeah.
And you're peers. And it was really hard for me at first to, like, I don't know that I really ever did. I don't know that I ever, like, found my real, like, you know, moments as an actor, because I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I was always playing with the idea of, like, holy shit, that's Harrison Ford and nursing.
You're trying. You had to keep it together. Yeah, yeah.
I want to have more opportunities like that, because I feel like the next one, I'm going to be like, okay, I've done this. Now I can. I know what this is about, and I don't have to be so focused on the fact that I'm dealing with these massive celebrities.
I think I'd still be that way with those dudes.
I probably would be too,
for sure. but I have gotten better at, you know, because there's different levels of celebrity, obviously.
Right.
Like, I did a doctor show with Dermot Mulroney recently.
Right.
And I grew up watching Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah.
You know, big fan of. I thought he was hilarious in Career Opportunities and Young Guns, and he was in the Gray movie. So I've always liked this guy. And I was a little concerned that one, never meet your heroes sort of thing, because I've had bad experiences on that level.
Yes.
I walked into it, like you say, you got to focus, just make it about the work.
Right.
I'm going to make it about the work. And that does help you get by. But also, it depends on the person, because he was a really cool guy.
Yeah.
And made not just me, but everybody who was a guest performer,
feel
at home and feel like part of the team, out of the gate, you know, very supportive of what everybody was doing.
Right.
And he was funny and personable, you know, in between takes. And I think I think if somebody's that kind of host as a star actor, it just benefits the production on a huge level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But you know, you don't always get that.
Yeah.
You get a lot. There's a lot of aloof celebrities, just mean celebrities.
They take themselves way too seriously and think their shit doesn't stink or something.
Right.
And yeah, that happens. TV for me is different. I mean, I think for some reason I don't, you know, I don't have that level of intimidation or celebrity awe that I had working on that film.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so TV I can go in and I feel like I'm pretty comfortable with whoever I'm working with star-wise, you know.
Yeah.
Unless they're assholes.
Right.
But that goes for anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I've worked with some real crazy people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because it creates such a horrible work environment and everybody's miserable.
Right.
And I'm like, it was a critically acclaimed show and all that, but at the same time, it was like, maybe the show would be that much better if everybody wasn't terrified of the star. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, maybe. Because on this, I had a recurring role for a few episodes on the show, and I didn't work with the star until my last day of the last episode that I worked on. And the whole experience was pleasant and wonderful, but then on that day where she was on set, it was completely different. The same people
give us the goods.
Who was this? It was Weeds.
Okay.
It was the MLP. She's
right.
I mean, because she, it was just unbelievable. Everybody was friendly and pleasant and fun and funny and good natured the whole time I worked. But then when I had this scene with her, as soon as she walked on the set, I mean, she walked on cursing at everybody out of the gate.
Really?
Like, emotional about something. I have no idea what. And it was just bizarre.
And I always wonder, like, you know, you hear that. It's like, okay, are they doing that because they're method actors and they're just being, like the way they need to be to make the scene work the best way? Or are they just fucking assholes?
yeah, and this didn't strike me as catching someone on a bad day.
Right.
This struck me as, this is the way it always is. Yeah, and then I came to learn, it's always like this.
I hate to hear that.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, she's really talented. But, I think there's a level of imbalance of some chemical.
Right.
Imbalance going on if somebody's behaving that way.
You need to give her like some like information for a doctor she can go see.
Right. But like I think some people stuff. I mean like some people have these disorders and purposefully don't take the medication because they think it'll make their acting worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
right, and so they end up just being horrible people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very odd. But yeah, it was so strange because it was all the same people, but on that day, everybody was walking on eggshells, terrified.
Yeah.
Cause they knew something bad was going to happen,
but
they didn't know when, they didn't know what it would be. They were all terrified. It was really weird.
It can't be good. That show ran for a while, right?
Yeah, and it was a good show. You know, it was funny and fun. And, I mean, I certainly had a great time working on it. Even that day with her, I mean, it was such a good part.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
That's
so,
the thing. You know, when you do this long enough and you get a recurring or something like that, I mean, you just cherish it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't even, you know, yeah, it doesn't matter who's going to try to walk all over you.
No.
You're still going to walk like, away feeling like, I got a fucking great gig.
I got a gig. I'm getting paid to do this.
This is what I want to be doing.
Yeah, go ahead. Yell at me.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was always good about, you know, walking away if somebody was being a, was being a jerk. I'll just, okay.
I always,
I'll just stay out of your way until I absolutely have to be in your line of sight for a scene. But other than that, yeah, I'm going to just stay the fuck away from you.
Move on. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, if you hate me, that's fine. It's cool.
I always had, because I've heard stories about, like, you know, I had friends who worked on 24.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Sutherland has that reputation.
Yeah, but he is the star of the greatest Christmas video I've ever seen.
Oh, well, then we gotta give him a pass, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Have you ever seen this? It's like, it's 10 seconds. He's in a hotel lobby, obviously lit.
Yeah.
He says something to a guy holding a phone, and the guy goes, "Yeah, yeah, go." And Sutherland just turns and sprints and jumps into a Christmas tree, just taking it down.
Wow.
In a hotel lobby. It's fantastic.
I'll have to see that.
Yeah, look that up.
That's why it'll change my whole perception of him. I got to meet him once a long time ago when he was working on The Lost Boys. I had dinner with him because my girlfriend, we were friends with his girlfriend at the time. And I was like 21 or 2, long time ago. And so we had this, you know, we had this dinner together, and that was the last. I never saw him again, and, you know, so I never had any, and he was fine. He was very aloof. He was very, like, kind of, you know, didn't really say much. I don't think he really was very interested in our company at all, but he was fine. I mean,
yeah, he was polite.
He was polite. He wasn't,
but aloof,
asshole.
Yeah.
But kind of aloof.
Yeah.
And then, but then I heard, like, you know, these stories about that he's really difficult to work with. And, but I, so I would have these fantasies of, like, you know, what if I got a job on 24 and I had to work with him and he, like, was an asshole to me.
Yeah.
And, like I would write scripts in my head of what I would say and how I would stand up to him and say, you're a fucking asshole and I don't need this job. And then walk off the set.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm leaving, you know, like.
Yeah.
I just, you know, that would be my way of handling it.
Sure.
In fantasy world.
I had those same fantasies about a very particular commercial director for a lot of years. But what I found, who I'm talking about. What I found was, as soon as I committed myself to, if he says one fucking thing to me, right, I will fucking walk.
Right.
I will walk away. Totally. You know? Totally. And once I was committed to that, he didn't say a goddamn thing to
me. Excellent.
He treated me with the utmost respect.
He was smart enough to know.
It's like a dog smelling fear, right, you know? Right, he exactly. was like, oh, I'm not going to mess with that guy. I'm going to go mess with this person over here.
They choose their victims pretty wisely, I think.
Yeah. It's bully mentality for sure.
Yeah.
They go after the weak gazelles, I guess. So did you get to work with Sutherland, or it was just... No, never.
No, I haven't.
Well, he's like a renowned, I don't know if he still drinks, but he was a pretty famous drunk guy.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a video of him tackling a Christmas tree in a hotel lobby.
I'm assuming he was drunk.
I assume. If he was sober, that makes it so much better. But regardless of the state he was in, it is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I'll have to look it up. That's funny.
Yeah. So, but he, yeah, I've heard. He's one of those guys that everybody has an LA story.
Right.
Like, once you're in L.A. for more than 2 years, you're going to have either a Kiefer Sutherland story or an Andy Dick story. You know, right. You're going to have a run-in with one of these people.
Right.
For me, it was Andy Dick. We were... this was, like, I was literally in L.A. for maybe 3 years at that point.
Yeah.
And we were outside of a rehearsal. You know that... the Cahuenga exit off the 101.
Yeah.
And there's a building. As soon as you take a right there, there used to be a, like, theater complex in there.
Right.
It was called the Off-Ramp Theater.
Yeah.
So we were rehearsing some show there, and we were just outside. And it was, midday.
Yeah,
no,
it's still there. I know that little theater there.
Oh, well, I don't think that it's not there anymore. Now it's something else. Okay. But whatever. We were outside just on a break, you know, smoking cigarettes, being cool. Mm-hmm. And this drunk guy comes out of nowhere and starts bothering my friend Rob for a ride. Rob being probably the most handsome of us.
Right.
And we're like, who's this fucking bum trying to bum a ride? And Rob's like, dude, we're in the middle of a rehearsal. And he's like, I don't care. I'll wait. How long are you going to be... And then, like, we all slowly realized, holy shit, we're all talking to Andy Dick, and he's trying to bum a ride home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, everybody's got one
of
those.
That's hysterical, yeah. Mine was when I was 24, I went to go play a round of, a pitch and putt nine-hole golf course in Studio City called it was the Whitsitt Golf Course. I forget which one. Anyway, and I go there by myself, and I'm just going to go and play nine holes, and I get my clubs and my balls, and they say you're going to pair up with those two guys out there, and I walk out there, and I'm looking at my card, and I go to meet him, and they turn around, and it's Jack Nicholson and his buddy Hank.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I played nine holes of golf with Jack Nicholson.
And how was that?
Oh, it was fun.
Was he funny? Or?
He was hysterical the whole time. He was like he was a terrible golfer. I mean, he would miss a shot and just like shank it it was terrible. And every time he would scream like like just let loose. But he was super nice.
Uh-huh.
Really, like he just didn't even bat an eye about it. There was no like edge of I'm a celebrity, don't talk to me kind of thing. It was great. And then afterwards I said I'm a big fan, because I was like trying to think. I'm terrible at like trying to promote myself. I'm terrible at it, and I'm trying to think the whole time like how can I tell him, like what can I say, maybe he can give me a job. And I'm thinking this, and at the end of the nine holes I finally say I'm a big fan of your work, and I just dropped something. I'm an actor too.
And what did he say?
He's like, well, good luck to you. It was so pathetic. It was so pathetic.
Well, I think that when you're dealing with actors, I mean, yeah, somebody with that level of celebrity obviously is producing his own stuff. So technically, I guess he could get you a job if he wanted to.
Right, right.
But it is an awkward thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not good at it either, never have been, but I sort of made peace with the fact that I just don't do that. Right. Some people do.
Yeah.
Like one of my biggest pet peeves is people on Facebook who announce that they booked a job.
Yeah.
And the reason I
can't stand that.
I know it's self-promotion or whatever,
right.
But it's also to me, would you go to like a homeless encampment under a bridge and announce to everybody, I have a job and a home?
Right.
That's what you're doing.
Right. Totally. I mean, I'm always happy for my friends to get work, but it's just not something I'm compelled to announce when I get a job. I just don't.
No. No, I very rarely. I
don't see the purpose of it. I don't see like.
I don't either.
Does it really lend to more work? I mean, does it like...
No, especially on Facebook, because, I mean, yeah, you might have some professional contacts on there, but...
Yeah, but...
But mostly that's about, hey, I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all right.
Exactly.
I booked it.
Booked it.
Hashtag actor's life. Shut up. But, people I love do it, so I...
Yeah.
I can't be too mad about it, but it irritates me.
Right.
Booked it.
Booked it.
For a while, I was writing, booked it at the top of an entry and then underneath say, and by that, I mean I was late for an appointment and I had to run really fast to get there on time. This is so, no,
did you get any likes?
Yeah, some people liked it, and then other people, I probably were like, oh, he's making fun of me, isn't he?
It's all about the likes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get a lot of likes, especially these days.
I notice you have some juggling balls, Todd. Tell me about your juggling balls.
I can't juggle right now because I have this fucking tennis elbow.
Oh, shit.
But I learned how to juggle in college, and then I just wanted to have them because it's kind of a good stress reliever.
Totally.
And I don't play video games and shit, so it's just like a nice thing to do, but I can't do it now.
Because
my elbow hurts. And I try to practice my harmonica, and that hurts my elbow too.
You're kidding me.
No.
Well, how did you get this tennis elbow?
I don't fucking know. Probably lifting weights. I was lifting weights for years.
Oh.
And then, like, one day it just started bothering me, and it hasn't stopped for the last, like, 7 months. Oh, damn. And now I've done everything. I've been to physical therapy, cortisone shots, gone to acupuncturist now. Like, that's when I trip the scale of desperation, when I have an ailment that won't go away. Yeah. I'm a chronic pain sufferer, and I've had a headache for 13 years.
Oh,
and I went through all that stuff and then was just like, this is all hogwash. And you know, with acupuncture and Eastern medicine, for me, I still feel like it's hogwash, but because I feel like at least I'm being proactive.
Right.
And that there's something to that psychologically. So I don't know.
That's a drag.
Yeah. It's a pain in my ass.
Yeah, it is. Chronic pain. No good.
Yeah. Chronic pain. I don't recommend it. Mm-mm. Don't get that. Mm-mm. Don't get chronic pains.
Don't do that.
No. So what you got anything coming up? Have you booked it?
My bookings of late? No. Like, in the last 6 months, I've had a couple of jobs. I actually did the reason I pointed out to your juggling balls, the reason I pointed your juggling balls out, Doc, was because I just learned how to juggle.
Oh, okay.
For the first time in my life.
Were you doing it for a job? Or?
Yeah, I got, so a friend of mine was doing these short films, and we did one a year and a half ago, and she really liked it. Liked my work in it, and then she had this idea for another one where I play a clown. It's called Bossa Nova. I play a clown gigolo.
A clown gigolo.
Which, and I think it's a brilliant idea. I don't know. I haven't seen any rough cut or anything of it. We shot it last year. And it's a great idea. I had not heard of this kind of concept before, so I was really drawn to it. But I'm just a clown who, like, has this career of doing, you know, clown shows for kids' parties, and then goes off secretly and has sex with the mom. And I make a ton of money doing it. And so, and it's a short. It'll be like 20 minutes long or something. But I had to learn to juggle. I had to learn to ride a unicycle too. I tried that. Didn't work for me.
You couldn't do it. That's really hard.
It's so hard. I mean, if I had stuck with it, maybe, but I just like gave up. I was like, no, you're getting a stunt.
I had to learn. That's why I play harmonica. I learned it for a show.
Oh, cool.
Because I don't have musical affinity. I'm not one of.
No.
Instrument I ever picked up, I gave up pretty quickly.
We're on the same page with that. I just don't have the ability for musical instruments. I wish I did.
I had to learn it. So, I mean, for me, it's sort of like learning choreography.
Right.
I'm never going to be like an improv harmonica guy, but I can learn, I can learn a basic song.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
You know, I had to learn taps and,
right.
Which is, that's like the first song you learn on any stupid instrument is taps.
Right,
so.
Right.
So I learned, and was messing around with it, but you know, I like it. I keep taking
online lessons and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I didn't learn any song. I just blow into it.
Yeah.
And make shit up that doesn't really sound like anything other than just a, you know, badly played harmonica. But it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And it's a good stress reliever.
It is. It is. Just, and the juggling balls, I actually taught myself to juggle. And I'd always, like, picked up juggling balls and, like, just, you know, they would flop all over the place. But I stuck with the juggling for, like, a month. And I, like, somehow it came down to, like, the day we were shooting the scene where I had to juggle, and I just forced myself to get past that next step, and I was juggling, and now I can juggle. Now I'm just like,
yeah, when you hit that,
you just get it's, it. It's like sort of like brain. You have to train your brain.
Yeah, it's like riding and learning how to ride a bike.
Yeah,
which my son just did because I'm a terrible dad. I finally bought him a bike for his 11th birthday.
And I was going to say he's like 27,
and he was very frustrated with it. You know, because I got him a multi-speed bike, because he's too old for, like, a shitty little training wheel bike.
Right.
You know, and my wife was sort of like, well, maybe you should put training wheels so you can just get it. And I was like, you can't put training wheels on this bike. You can't do it.
Right.
And so I struggled with him for a while, but, like, he got it one day.
Good.
And it was just amazing. That's like one of those fatherhood moments.
Yes.
That's just,
It's iconic. Amazing. It's classic. Yes,
because he's found an independence that, you know, he didn't have before.
Right,
and we let him take the bike, go off on him in his own. Although when he does that, we sit
and you worry.
And we worry,
of course.
But
yes, you just sitting here hoping he comes home.
yeah,
by himself.
And Hill will send me out,
right?
If it's, she feels he's been gone too long. You get your bike out and you go find him.
That is the scariest part of being a parent. My 4-year-old, he has a bike, and he's not quite ready to take the training wheels off yet, but he's close.
Yeah.
He has a balance bike also, so he has two bikes. He has a balance bike that has no pedals,
mm-hmm.
and you like just coast on it, and he can coast on it and balance on that for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So he's got the balancing part, but when you add the pedals, that's a whole new brain thing.
Yeah,
and he's not there yet. So he can coast on his pedal bike, but he can't pedal because once he pedals, he falls over.
Interesting.
So it's like he's just got to get past that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
that'll be a big, that'll be a momentous day.
It is. It's a cool, it's really cool. I mean, I remember when I first, you know, figured it out when I was a kid. It was great. It's a great thing.
I had horrible accidents on my bike.
Oh, I had all kinds of accidents.
I was always taking big risks.
Yeah,
ending up a bloody mess.
Yeah,
yeah.
We would bike. We had like this summer home in this tiny town on a tiny lake, mm-hmm. And there was, you know, paths through the woods that led to a sand pit, which is just a big fucking pile of sand,
right?
And you know, the tractors would come in and they'd create a cliff situation, so we'd go to the top of the thing and then go down the side of the cliff on bikes, and we hurt ourselves
lot.
Doing that.
What fun.
It was so much fun. But we got banged up pretty bad. Oh, those days of the sand pits. Those days. So you gotta get out of here.
Probably soon. I hope that, you know, we've resolved some major issues in the world.
We've helped people with their acting.
Uh-huh.
With their psychological disorders.
Mm-hmm.
With their racism.
Some pretty big issues. Pretty big topics we've covered.
Yeah, we really kind of nailed it. there's really nothing left to talk about. All right, so do you have a sign-off you do for your show?
Just to say to all, a good night.